Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and good morning. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcast on iTunes.
Good morning, Mark.
Hey, Francis. How you doing?
I'm well this morning. I'm coming to the conclusion of a project that we've begun, and I would like to talk about it on the air.
Cool.
We are instituting at our new restaurant, which just got 2 stars in the New York Times on Sunday, and a very favorable review.
It was a very good and very nice review.
That's our more casual restaurant, Catherine Lombardi. Mm-hmm. We have never had a very serious cocktail program at Stage Left. But in the next couple of weeks, we're going to be rolling out a very serious cocktail program at Catherine Lombardi. And what's interesting is I've spent the last couple of weeks working with our chef and one of our maitre d's upstairs, Samantha, in putting this cocktail program together. And I think you've seen, you've participated when you've been able, but you've seen us going a little crazy up there. And I just think that I want to share with people how interesting it is to create these cocktails.
It is fun. It's fun. It's interesting. There's a whole process that goes with it that I think people don't realize when you're talking about a great cocktail. And one of the things that as we've gone through this process, we've realized more and more, and I think we always knew because we've been making cocktails for a long time, is a great cocktail is like a great dish. It's got several components, balance.
Right,
and each ingredient needs to add and not detract.
And each ingredient needs to speak and come together. But what I think has been interesting is I did a lot of research on the cocktails because obviously we have a lot of friends who are some of the most famous bar people in the country. And these are Dale DeGroff and Audrey Saunders and all these great people in Manhattan. But the research that I did book-wise was to come up with the historical context of a lot of older cocktails, plus we've come up with some new ones. But then what we've had fun doing over the last 2 weeks, probably spent about 30 hours doing, with the chef. And I think that a great advantage that we have is our executive chef, Anthony Bucco, really wanted to get involved in the creating of the cocktails.
Well,
and
in this era of where something called the bar chef has become popular nomenclature for great bartenders and bartenders who are putting these things together. I think adding a chef to the process was a really interesting way for us to do this.
And it sounds kind of silly if you haven't had like really good contemporary cocktails, but literally, I mean, we had the chef back behind the bar, and why would you put less effort into creating a cocktail than you would into creating a dish on the menu?
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, we spent a lot of money. We threw a lot of liquor down the drain using historical recipes,
We definitely threw some down the drain. Because not every cocktail works. Okay.
Well,
and sometimes you put the ingredients together and they don't go the way that you think they're going to.
Well, but even the cocktails that work, I mean, you sort of zero in on what it is exactly that you want to do. And you find with the historical cocktails, things like something may call for grenadine.
Mm-hmm.
I'll give you an example of a drink. A Pink Lady, which sounds ridiculous, right? And the way that disco drinks were made in the 70s and 80s, that was a terrible drink. It was made with all artificial garbage.
Yep.
But a Pink Lady is made with one of the ingredients that goes into it is grenadine.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the grenadine you find in the markets now is corn syrup.
Supermarket. It's just a corn syrup sweetener.
Corn syrup, artificial flavors, and
red coloring.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
But we did some research, and we found out that the original grenadine was derived from pomegranates.
Mm-hmm.
And so, of course, the chef goes into the kitchen with pomegranates, and we work and find, you know, a balanced grenadine that we make, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And now you put that into a drink like a Pink Lady.
And it tastes like pomegranates.
And it's awesome.
Instead of red corn syrup, instead of a lollipop.
But then you try that drink five, seven, nine times. A little more of this, a little less of that. Let's check that out. You pass it around between the chef and somebody else. And you do that during the course of the day. And it really is just like coming up with a dish. So I'm pretty excited about the stuff we're going to roll out. I think you'll see some familiar names and you'll see some new things that we've invented. But, I mean, we have a lot of house ingredients. And that's the other thing about a great bar. If you look back historically at the American bars pre-Prohibition, bartenders made their own bitters. Like a house made its own bitters. They made their own tinctures. They made their own...
Just like a place will have its own Bloody Mary recipes, this place would have their own condiments and their own candied ginger and their, you know, all these ingredients for great cocktails. And a great bar, you'll see ingredients. You won't just see someone spraying sour mix out of a gun.
And the other thing is, you know, when you go to a truly great bar, like, okay, let's talk about the great bars in New York City, because that's where we're near. So if you're podcasting from far away, please forgive us. If you ever come to New York, here's where you should go for cocktails. Angel's Share downtown, the Pegu Club downtown, Employees Only, Milk and Honey.
Flatiron Lounge.
These are maybe the top five, or I've probably left out a few, so among the very top cocktail places in Manhattan. When you go to one of these places and you order a cocktail, whether it's a house cocktail or whether it's an old standard, it's always the same. And in your local dive bar, you say, oh, I want that the way that Bob, the bartender, makes it, or I want it the way that Joe makes it, or I want...
Right, Joe makes a better margarita than Mike, so I want Joe's margarita, right?
Exactly. And that's not how, like when you go to a great restaurant, the dishes should be consistent. When you go to a great bar, if they're serious about cocktails, and there are all sorts of bars that aren't serious about cocktails, and that's okay. But if you go to a great cocktail bar, the cocktail should be consistent.
And why are these people called bar chefs? These people are called bar chefs for a reason. Because a great bar chef notices that the oranges aren't as sweet as they were a week ago. So he makes an adjustment.
Putting in
a little bit more sugar into that to adjust for the fact that the oranges aren't as sweet as they were. Mm-hmm. And a great bar chef makes that cocktail come out the same every time and by the house style.
And, it sounds ridiculous to talk about a bar chef, but, I mean, these things are very serious. And, frankly, what you find in most places, because the cocktail craze really had, I mean, Sex and the City brought the Cosmopolitan to everyone's lips, right? But what you're looking for... And I think where restaurants go awry, and there's a drink out there called an apple martini. One of the ingredients that's called for in the standard apple martini is this awful, god-awful, artificially flavored melted Jolly Rancher. Of a piece of garbage liqueur called apple pucker. Now, listen, if you're 12 or you're 17 and, you know, you like apple pucker, you know, it's artificially flavored, candied, too sweet, too sour, and... But if you go to a real cocktail place, like any of the places I just mentioned, many of them will have an apple martini.
Sure.
Maybe
here's
apple
a rule.
Juice, Calvados.
Apple martini must have some apple product in it.
Right, that's not artificially flavored.
It can have an apple brandy. It can have apple juice. It can have some kind of apple essence.
But you should look
it's got to have apple in it
but
to
you
be
should
called
look
an
for
apple
the
martini.
Same thing in a cocktail that you look for in great food and pre-processed, pre-packaged. Garbage is not what you're looking for. Anyway, so that's really interesting. We're going to roll that out at Catherine Lombardi pretty soon. Our guest coming up in the next part of the show is the chef de cuisine at Striped Bass in Philadelphia, which is a nationally important restaurant that's just recently been reopened by Stephen Starr. His name is Christopher Lee, and he'll be joining us to talk about the food scenes in Philadelphia and his role in this historic restaurant in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey 1450. The time is 11:15.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys.
Hey, everybody, welcome back. You're listening to Francis and Mark from Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick, and our guest today is Christopher Lee. Christopher has won the prestigious James Beard Rising Chef of the Year Award from James Beard. That award is given every year to a WonderCon chef age 30 or younger, I'm so jealous, by the Beard Awards Committee. If they feel he's most likely to have a significant impact on the industry nationally, Christopher is also the chef de cuisine under executive chef Alfred Portali at restaurant Striped Bass in Philadelphia. That's pretty impressive stuff, Chris. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, not bad.
How you doing, Christopher?
Good, how you doing?
Very well.
Now, that James Beard Award thing, I think that a lot of our listeners don't understand that that's like the Academy Awards for people in our industry. Was that was a pretty big deal when you got it. Was it expected?
Not at all. Not one bit, actually. It was really weird.
And where were you when you got that award?
It was in the Marriott Marquis in New York, in Manhattan, in Times Square. It was a really big audience. When you say the Academy Awards, you hit it right on the dot. It was very odd. It was just like that.
It's wild. It's like, and you know what's funny is there are so few organizations that rank, rate, or evaluate or write about restaurants and our profession nationally, because most of the press is regional for mm-hmm. obvious reasons. I mean, you're not likely to go to a restaurant in Wyoming if you live in New Jersey.
Exactly.
But the James Beard Foundation and the James Beard Award Committee really is probably the only national organization to do something like that. So, Craig, congratulations to you on that.
Yep, thank you.
Now, let's explain to people what you do for a living. Striped Bass is an institution of a restaurant in Philadelphia. It's now owned by the Star Restaurant Organization, Stephen Starr's Philadelphia Restaurant Empire.
It's gone through a couple of different owners.
But it was originally opened by Neil Stein, Starr's one-time competitor, who's now in bankruptcy. And Philadelphians were sad to see it close and were jubilous when the nationally recognized and beautiful restaurant would not be lost, but was reopened by Philly favorite son Stephen Starr. Starr completely refurbished the place. They needed a crack guy in there to be chef de cuisine, and that's you. That puts you in the middle of a lot of a swirling controversy of big personalities, high-profile places.
Stephen Starr is a big personality.
It was a great ride. Actually, Alfred Portale, as of this past October, has moved on from the project.
Oh, really?
He's venturing in some other projects, heading out to Vegas and stuff like that.
So are you now executive chef?
Yes.
That's great.
Extraordinary.
I've been the chef of the restaurant since October.
Now, do you feel, working in a historic restaurant like that, do you feel that there's a sort of a special weight that Philadelphians put? Because, you know, that's really, Striped Bass and Lebec Fan are the two places that Philadelphians point to as the pride of restaurants there.
Right there on Walnut Street, you kind of have restaurant block.
Do you feel a special weight being in a historic place like that?
Well, it's a huge weight. When we first reopened, we always said we wanted not to be compared to the old Bass, but just to be looked at as a new, the new Bass. But it really hit home a week and a half ago when we got our fourth bell, that how historic the restaurant is, and for the many years it was open and never really achieved that status. And when we achieved it, it really hit home then for a lot of us, because there's a lot of veterans on front of house staff that have been there for over 5-6 years and worked at the old Bass, and then when I announced the new Bass there, we had some great conversations, but it hit home more so than in the beginning.
Well, Striped Bass, for anybody who's never been there or doesn't know it, is in one of the most beautiful buildings that a restaurant's ever been in. One of the greatest settings for a restaurant, I think, is an old bank, with really high ceilings and just a big kind of airy feel to them. I love the setting of Striped Bass.
I agree with you.
You know, and you should explain that four bells. I mean, if you're from Philadelphia, we don't talk in stars, we talk in bells. So that's
right.
What the fourth bell. Now, we ate there. Mark and I have not been down since this Star Restaurant Organization has taken over this place.
What are you guys waiting for?
We'll be there next Thursday.
I was taking an invitation. All right, we're in.
But we were there when it was Stein's place. How has the place changed, both in the way it looks and what you guys are doing in the kitchen?
Well, it was remodeled a little bit. We added some new chandeliers, added some front of the house decor, nice large mirror, opened up the bar a little bit, removed a lot of those plants, those palm trees that was known for the old Striped Bass.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
As far as the food, I mean, we're just doing a modern contemporary seafood, like a contemporary seafood cuisine.
So what makes it contemporary? What are we doing contemporarily with seafood in America, do you think, that makes it, up to date and contemporary?
Well, we're challenging the flavors, challenging the the palate more, going into a cuisine that's, it's mindful. When you dine at the Bash, you're actually going to hopefully have a time or be entertained, not just mentally or with whoever you're dining with, but, have the whole aspect or whole overall feel of what a dining experience should be. Challenge your palate.
Do you challenge people on the plate? What are you doing contemporarily that is challenging on the plate with seafood?
Well, we're introducing new flavors, introducing new modern techniques, some avant-garde techniques. Nothing too crazy. Challenging the old school way. Actually, we're remodeling a lot of the like old, what we like to call old school familiar flavors from our youthful age. Like I'm putting on a dish. It's going to go on Monday. We're calling it foie gras American classics. It's going to be foie gras done three ways. We're doing the classic ice cream good humor bar. We're also going to be doing a deli sandwich and backyard barbecue. It's called. So we're going to do three different forms of foie gras, from extreme cold to room temperature to extremely hot, but all done with American classic themes.
Tell us the ice cream sandwich. Tell us more about that.
That's going to be an ice cream pop, actually. What we do is we made a foie gras ice cream, put it on a stick, dipped it in chocolate. Actually, it's a curry-scented chocolate. And then that's going to be, it's like a little good humor bar. It's kind of funny because it's really a miniature ice cream pop, just like you would get.
Chocolate-covered ice cream foie gras pop. I'll be there next Thursday at 7. We'll take a table for 2. The restaurant is Striped Vass on Walnut Street in Philadelphia. We're talking with Christopher Lee. He's the executive chef there, and we'll be back with him in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:25.
The place, Brooklyn, New York, post-World War II. An Italian-American woman named Catherine Lombardi cooks for her family. What's so special about that? Well, lots. Food was central back then. Good food handed down from the traditions of two countries. Food that filled the whole house with the sweet smells of garlic, tomato, and basil. No matter when you stopped by or who you were, you were sure to be fed and fussed over. Catherine showed her love on the plate and out of the pot. Any who were lucky enough to receive it never forgot. This is Mark Pascal from the Restaurant Guys radio show and Stage Left. I've just opened Catherine Lombardi Restaurant in New Brunswick, and its mission, to live up to the standards set by Catherine Lombardi. So come by the bar, sit by the fire. Have some fresh mozzarella and antipasto. The manicotti and tortelloni are amazing, and the veal chop will make you cry. Our wine list, of course, without parallel. We've got to live up to the standards set by Catherine Lombardi. You see, Catherine Lombardi was my grandmother. Come let me show you where I came from.
Catherine Lombardi Restaurant in New Brunswick, 732-296-9463 or CatherineLombardi.com.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, 1450 WCTC.
Hey, you're back with the Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis, the Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick, New Jersey. And our guest today is Christopher Lee. He's the chef. He's the executive chef at Striped Bass, the historic and newly reopened restaurant on Walnut Street in Philadelphia, PA. Now, you're known at Striped Bass, Christopher, for seafood. It's a seafood restaurant.
Right.
One of our great friends is a guy named Rick Moonen, who I'm sure you know is also a great fish chef. And he's always said, and I agree, that like guys who cook fish are different than other chefs. Do you think that's true? Do you think you have to have a different perspective on food to be a great fish chef?
I'm not gonna. Hello.
Hi.
I'm not going to 100% agree with that, but it does take a gentle touch, a more sexier approach, more. You know, to do seafood than meat. Meat is, you know, kind of what we call more the aggressive cookery, rather than seafood's more finesse. I wouldn't dub that, you know, you need to be a different person or have a different personality. You just have to have a little finer touch in a lot of ways.
Now, when we go to a great steak restaurant, one of the things we almost never do is order fish. And usually, actually, we make fun of people who order fish in a great steak restaurant.
If you're, there's an old proverb that says, he who orders fish in the steakhouse in New York is a fool. It's not an old proverb. I just made it up.
Sounds like a new proverb, Francis.
Anyway, go ahead.
But in your restaurant, should people be coming and ordering fish all the time, or are you equally adept at cooking meat?
Well, that's what we're trying to change. The old Striped Bass serves strictly fish. We are venturing into a side of the restaurant where we're adding meat influences more and more as each seasonal change comes about.
Well, unless you're serving cod foie gras.
Yeah.
you know, we're doing a lot of mixed themes like the cat or the modern surf and turf, like combining different seafoods with meats and then doing it in that way.
Give me an unusual seafood meat combination.
Last season, last menu change, we did Nantucket Bay scallops with crispy sweetbreads.
Sweetbreads and scallops. That's for the more adventurous diners in our listening area. Maybe someone from the podcast will come down for that. But our guest is Christopher Lee. He's the executive chef at Striped Bass in Philadelphia. We'll be talking more with him in just a moment, and we're going to be talking about the differences between two different cities where he's cooked, New York City and Philadelphia, two exciting food towns. We'll be back after the news. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:30.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You are listening to the Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcast on iTunes.
Our guest today is Executive Chef Christopher Lee of Striped Bass Restaurant, a historic restaurant in downtown Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, which has recently been opened by Stephen Starr and the Starr Restaurant Organization. It's a beautiful restaurant, and we're going to go visit there soon. But I think one of the things that's interesting, Christopher, is a lot of your experience was in New York City.
Yeah.
And a lot of our social network is in New York City, and a lot of our friends are working in New York City. And when you live in Jersey, you're sort of schizophrenic. You're either pulled to Philadelphia or you're pulled to New York City.
Right.
And so comparisons are inevitable between the two places. And I think what I'm curious about, now you worked at Oceana, Danielle, John George, and how do you compare working in the two cities? I mean, both from a professional standpoint, and also, you know, in New York, there's a very vibrant restaurant community. I mean, go out after work to restaurants like Employees Only or Peasant, or maybe it used to be like in Blue Ribbon, and you'll find, you know, a lot of restaurant employees sitting around ordering dinner at 3 o'clock in the morning and having cocktails. Does that exist in Philly?
No. Well, unfortunately, that's what I miss the most about New York. There are a couple of restaurants that are kind of housing to that theme. Mele Wa is one of them that opens till 5 or 4 in the morning.
I'm sorry, what place?
Mele Wa.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a Chinese, authentic Chinese restaurant in Chinatown. They're open really late. Other restaurants that, like, they stay open till like 1 o'clock or they serve food till 1. Amada, Jose Garza's new restaurant, will be staying open late to that hour. Society Hotel, they're open until like 1.
What time is legal last call in Pennsylvania? How late can they serve liquor?
I think it's like 1:45, I think it's the last call, or 1:30.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because people think that the 4 o'clock in the morning last call in New York City is really decadent. But you know, what's funny is there's a whole community in New York City of people who get off of work at midnight or 1 or 1:30 in the morning.
Frankly, not just New York City. I mean, how many times have we gone to New York City after work? Because, you know, the restaurants and the bars in New Jersey are closing, and we go off to New York City.
And I think that people think that it's people who've been drinking since 4:30 in the afternoon who are still drinking at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Well, sometimes that's happened, too.
But that would be a problem.
But, we've all encountered those folks. But, you know, it's interesting to have that sense of community. I think it's one of the strengths of the restaurant business in New York City is that people do, you know, you can go out for a couple of beers after work. Just for a couple of beers after work for me is 2 o'clock in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
So what's the social life down there like for being in the restaurant community, Chris?
Well, we try to go out and catch that last call. If it doesn't happen, you know, it depends. We just go home. I find myself going home more often than not. You know, you spend a little more time in the home.
So you can actually raise a family.
Yeah, exactly.
You realize you're giving Philly, like, a bad rap. Now, but what's it like different? What is it like different cooking in Philadelphia and dining out in Philadelphia as opposed to being in New York City? Is there more pressure in New York City? Are there more resources available to you in Philadelphia? What are the differences you find?
You know, it's hard to compare the two. One's such a huge city, and, you know, Philadelphia is a very big city itself. You do have your pockets of real foodies, people that enjoy to go out. We've had great success. The customers that come in, our clientele,
mm-hmm.
our repeat clientele, you know, they're great with feedback, and they enjoy what we do, and they appreciate what we do. Are we in a secondary market of, like, purchasing items? Yeah, yes, we are. Philadelphia is not a main market for products, which causes us sometimes have to really, really source out or spend a little extra money just to find the products that we want.
How do you do that? I mean, I think that's one of the interesting things we wanted to talk about.
One of the things we do, you know, I guess we're a lot significantly closer to New York City than you are.
But we're in a secondary market here in Jersey.
But we'll travel to New York to get some of those products.
Well, that's what we have to do. Instead of traveling, we know like most purveyors do have a FedEx program set up. We'll pay that, and you know, which is why sometimes people are like, well, why are your prices so high? Well, there's a reason for it.
Mm-hmm.
We buy the best of the best.
Right.
I don't really fault on proteins. That's the one thing we don't do. I mean, I developed this program about 2-3 years ago now. When I was at Oceana, mm-hmm. of a great seafood program, and I brought it down here. Does it cost a little bit more? It costs a little bit more.
Right. You're not 10 minutes from Fulton Street I guess Hunts Point now. But you're not 10 minutes from the fish market anymore. You're 2.5 hours away from
right.
the fish market.
I mean, there's a couple of good fish companies in the city. I use Anthony Seafoods, which is Tony McCarthy. He's excellent at a lot of the local stuff. Samuels and Son is another good purveyor, but if I'm buying like direct stuff, I'll use direct markets, Hawaiian markets.
Mm-hmm.
I have if I'm going to get crab from Alaska, I use a guy that's really up in Alaska, and stuff like that. So we really, really, really fine tune the fish buying program. But like I said, it does, the on the reverse side of it, it does cost a little bit more than if I was in New York.
You know, it's funny. I think that and we've often said that 70% of being a restaurateur or a chef owner or restaurateur is sourcing great ingredients. I mean, half of Mark and I spend a lot of time, and the chef, we all spend a lot of time sourcing the best ingredients and making sure they're best and cultivating relationships with purveyors and producers that bring you the best stuff. And I think that's one of the hardest things about what we do. Now, you're in an organization. You're in the Star Restaurant Organization. But you have to be, known as having some of the best food of any of those restaurants. Do you buy a lot through that organization, do you find? Or do you find that as chef, you go out as Striped Bass on your own and source stuff?
I source my own stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I have my own program. I do my, I'm lucky. I mean, Stephen has been lucky enough to support us. He believes in what we do. He really lets us, listen, you guys know what you're doing. Just go for it. And we try to do that. There's nothing wrong with, what the company does or if they buy, from a certain company to, for bulk reasons. I don't mind that, but we run our own program pretty much.
Well,
Francis and I are much more control freaks than that.
But now, one of the things that I think is really interesting about sourcing seafood, and one of the things we really try and do, we're very concerned. The oceans are ecologically imperiled in certain places, and it's very hard, we find, to keep track of what you can sort of ecologically responsibly buy. There have been problems with caviar and Chilean sea bass and Atlantic swordfish. Do you guys find that you pay a lot of attention to that stuff? And do you find that it's difficult? If you do, do you find that it's difficult to keep track of what's an ecologically responsible purchase? And do your customers care?
That was a lot of questions.
Yeah,
that was a lot of questions.
Holy crap. Answer any of them.
Yeah, pick one.
We definitely, at least, I run a program and I promote and I educate my staff on the fact of sustaining seafood, the life of it. I agree with that whole fight. Since we do stay away from some of those products. Caviar, it was the recent one. As of January 3rd, it was like a no importation law completely passed, which is fine, but on the other side, swordfish is fighting back. Chilean sea bass is still, I guess, on that cusp. But,
Do the customers care in Philadelphia? I mean, do people ask? I mean, it's funny. If we put swordfish on a menu around here, sometimes you get customers come in and say, what are you doing?
Yeah, but you'd also get some customers who were like, yeah, I'll take the swordfish. I love swordfish.
Exactly. Do people care down there in Philly?
It's half and half. I think there's more people. Let's say there's more people in New York that would raise more of a stink about it. Mm-hmm. Down here, I haven't had to run in because I haven't put something like that on my menu. So I can't 100% answer that.
Well, an interesting thing that we're going to talk about when we come back from the break is we're going to talk with our guest is Christopher Lee. He's the executive chef of Striped Bass, and we're talking about the controversy where Iranian and Russian caviar has been banned from export to try and preserve those fisheries. And Christopher has come up with his own way to battle this. He actually makes his own caviar, and we're going to be talking about that in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey. Jersey 1450, the time is 11:45. Hi, this is Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants and also of the Restaurant Guys radio show. You know, one of the best things about the restaurant business is the creative side of it. Coming up with big ideas and then turning those concepts into reality is awesome. It's what I love most about what I do. But it can't stop there. If you can't communicate exactly what it is you're doing, then you'll find yourself standing alone in your dining room, just you and your big ideas. The Mardini Group can help you get your ideas across to others. The Mardini Group is a boutique graphic design firm, and they do extraordinary work. We use them, and as you know, we only use the best. Whether it's menu design, product packaging, a corporate report, promo material, a homepage, or an awesome logo for a brand new project like Catherine Lombardi, we turn to the Mardini Group. Some small business owners don't realize how important it is to have a strong visual identity. Without it, you come across as less than professional. That can cost you trust, and that lowers your bottom line. First impressions count for a lot, and that's why you need the Mardini Group. Go to RestaurantGuysRadio.com and click on the Mardini Group link or call them at 718-694-9944. The Mardini Group for graphic design, 718-694-9944.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys.
Hey, you're back at the Restaurant Guys. Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick. Our guest today is Christopher Lee, who is the chef at Striped Bass, the historic restaurant in Philadelphia. And before the break, we were talking about imperiled parts of seafood and of the ocean, harvest of our ocean. And one of the stocks on which there's a lot of pressure are sturgeon, from which beluga caviar comes from. And actually, exports of sturgeon from Iran and Russia are now illegal. And Chris, I've read, and I've never sampled it, but I've read that you make your own caviar. Now,
yes, we do.
Now, you're not a fish.
No.
Okay. So,
checked.
How do you do that?
Well, it's actually an avant-garde technique. When I say avant-garde, it was a technique that was developed by Ferran Argery in Spain.
At El Bulli.
At El Bulli, yes, about 8 years ago. This is what we call his faux caviar. It's, you know, his caviar that it's combining seaweed with certain salt, and then you can make any solution, any flavor base, into little spears, little beautiful tiny spears, which looks like caviar. It has the texture, if you do it right, it has the texture of caviar because it has that outer shell and then a pop in the center. But it's not actually fish eggs.
Okay, now you've been doing this for a while. Ferran Adria just published his book. It's only in Spanish, and it's $1 billion.
Yeah, well,
how did you come up with this recipe?
I think that's his third or fourth book, actually, and it takes about 2 years to get it in translation into English, and they do cost a lot of money.
So I don't think the caviar technique is in the book. How did you wind up making this cutting edge thing?
Well, actually, it's kind of funny because it was a recipe that I got about almost 4 years ago now, and it was a recipe from someone that trailed there, who staged. But the stagiaire, brought the recipe back. He brought it back in, like, broken English, like, because he's like, I didn't really understand what they were saying. They were talking too fast. And so we had a recipe that worked, but it didn't work.
Uh-huh.
So then what we did was, at that point, I tried once for a little bit to do it, and then all of a sudden I stopped, and it was about a year ago that I, well, maybe actually 2 years ago that I started trying to get the ingredients and trying again, because the recipe never worked from the start.
So basically you have a black market incomplete recipe,
right?
And you're out to sleuth out the answer.
Right, and it took us about 8 months to get really like working on it like once or twice a week to get down the ratios and now we have a formula and it works.
That's awesome.
That's great.
That's
really
awesome.
How do you feel about the whole techno food movement? Where think it's a bright star going to burn out quickly?
Before you answer, we should explain to our listeners there is a whole school of chefs led by the grand poopah of this is a guy named Ferran Adrià at a place called El Bulli in Barcelona, or outside of Barcelona, where they are doing kind of new food, bringing technology to bear on traditional foods to make new textures and new flavors and everything from like. He'll bring you out like a balloon full of flavored gas to breathe as a course. Talk about losing weight, right? What do you think about that? And there are chefs in America that sort of are
emulating that.
Well, emulating it completely, and other chefs like it sounds like you are, Christopher, sort of working some of those things into your cuisine. What do you think the future of techno food is?
What do I think of it? I think of it.
Do you think it's here to stay? Do you think that that's the future of food, or do you think it's going to have a small influence and there are going to be isolated restaurants like Il Bulli and like places in Washington or New York, and most food is not going to go that way?
Right. See, I don't want to like step on anyone's toes here. I'll give you my opinion about the whole thing.
Great.
The food is a great idea. It's a great concept. I enjoy it. I think it's very cool. I think it's very. Very modern. I think it's very fun. Is it for everybody? No. Is mm-hmm. it something that's going to replace? Is it going to replace basic flavor? And is it going to replace like just standard food? No, I don't think it will ever do that. What we do is we at this right best we like to play with these new modern techniques, but mm-hmm. we don't like to overbear it or welcome it into the restaurant.
Right.
We
don't want it to drive the restaurant.
Mm-hmm. We don't want the food to get so out there that people don't understand. We still live on taste. Everything is taste.
It's a piece of the puzzle as opposed to
right, exactly. It helps us drive a little more, creativity. But besides that, it's not going to be the driving force for me.
You know, I think I agree. I do agree with you. I think Mark and I agree with you a lot. I'm actually trying to try and get to Il Bulli in late May with a friend of mine, and I want to go. But I'll tell you something. And there's another restaurant in New York I want to visit that's like that, and there's WD50 in Manhattan that is sort of in that ilk of sort of reinventing food. And while I tell you it's interesting, I want to go to a restaurant like that once every 6 months. I don't want to eat there every night.
I want to go to a restaurant like that once every 2 years.
you hit it on the nose. I mean, restaurants like that, we're venturing into that. That's the common feedback.
Right. Mm-hmm.
A lot of normality, normal people. That's why I developed my opinion about it. When I was younger, I thought it was very cool. I'm like, this is awesome. This is
for me.
I don't want to get into it. Mm-hmm. But it's definitely. I've matured on it.
For me, I think it's a cool experience, but it's not how I want to eat.
Hey, Christopher, thank you for joining us on The Restaurant Guys. It's been really swell to have you.
Awesome. Thank you very much.
The restaurant is Striped Bass on Walnut Street in Philadelphia. It's at stripedbassrestaurant.com, and you can go try Christopher Lee's food if you're in the listening area. You're certainly in striking distance, and it's worth the trip. Take care, man.
Looking forward to you guys coming in.
We will.
Thanks. We'll do it soon.
All right.
And we're not kidding. I'm actually thinking about going tonight. If we do, we'll give you the review on the air tomorrow. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:55.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, 1450 WCTC.
You're back with The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis. That was a wonderful... little show that we did with Chris Lee from Striped Bass. Now, Striped Bass is a very, very important restaurant. And it was opened many years ago and closed. And Philadelphians mm-hmm. were – this was a point – there are two restaurants in Philly that matter more than any others. And they're Striped Bass and Le Bec Fin. Mm-hmm. And Georges Perrier is the executive chef at Le Bec Fin. And Striped Bass is a gorgeous restaurant.
A really spectacular restaurant. For us, too, we are – in New Brunswick, we're about – an hour for about I'm sorry about
40 45
minutes
Manhattan.
45 minutes from Manhattan and about an hour and 15 minutes from Philly, so we really can pick and choose where we go to in an evening.
Well, but the problem is we work nights, and we like to stay out late. So Philly's not exactly the...
That does make it harder to go to Philly. It absolutely does.
Actually, I think that they were considering a new motto for the for Philadelphia. It was the city that sleeps.
Philadelphia is a great, great
it is.
City. It's smaller
Until
than New York.
Until about midnight, it's more 1
intimate
o'clock.
It's more intimate than New York, but at the same time, it's certainly not the grand city. I mean, it's a second. He just said it's a secondary market. It's not New York City. It's not the primary market. It's not the same thing. And you know, you don't have the big fish markets and some of the things that you have.
The city that sleeps. I like it a lot. Anyway, the thing about it is we work nights a lot and we like to go out at night. And so, you know, we like to make reservations for dinner at 10 o'clock at night.
Right. So our choice has almost always got to be Manhattan just because of our hours. But yours doesn't.
Yeah.
Because most of you work reasonable hours and can go to any restaurant you want.
And the other thing is Philadelphia is a very accessible city. Mm-hmm. They do have taxis. They do have mass transit. It's reasonable to stay in Philadelphia if you're coming to visit. And the thing about Philadelphia restaurants is, and I've dined at a lot of Philadelphia restaurants, mm-hmm. it's an up-and-coming restaurant market. 20 years ago, Philadelphia was nothing on the food market, and now restaurants are a very important fabric of downtown Philadelphia.
Well, Stephen Starr's opened a bunch of restaurants down there.
And some of them hit and some of them miss.
But there are
a lot of people opening restaurants.
There's always a show. Whenever Stephen Starr opens a restaurant, there's a lot of show. There's no doubt about it.
It's true. But, I mean, there are a lot of restaurants in downtown Philly, and they're very accessible and they're very friendly. And I find that they're a little more reasonably priced. Wine is a little expensive down there because Pennsylvania has these
tough
weird
place to buy wine.
Well, anyway, I hope you enjoyed the hour this afternoon. We're going to go tonight, probably have dinner at Striped Bass. I'm Francis Schott.
And I'm Mark Pascal.
We are the Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 12 noon.